And welcome everybody on YouTube to Off the Hook Overtime, where we continue the conversation and maybe even take phone calls from our listeners. Did we make it to YouTube, Kyle?
I'm still checking, but I am here.
You're here in person.
I'm in YouTube.
I could have told you that. But,
I'm in YouTube, yeah.
But since we don't have Rob and Gila tonight, they had a previous engagement they must be off to, we have to check this ourselves on our end. I think we, Alex, you're in Skype land. You have a phone up to your ear, so maybe you can tell us as well.
Yeah, I'm listening right now.
Okay,
we're
good.
On.
We're on. That's awesome. Wow.
I think our level...
Well, your levels are messed up because we only heard the first part of that sentence. Our levels,
yeah,
what?
I think our levels are a little high.
They're high this week. Usually they're low on YouTube. Kyle, does that seem to make sense to you? Are they in fact high? Should I bring them down?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe just a little bit, but it sounds great. It sounds like overtime.
Okay. Well, people don't like it when we sound great.
We sound okay, you know.
Yeah, we want to sound okay, not great.
We sound like enough.
Yeah, we always are enough. All right, that was quite a show. Alex, how much trouble am I in for bashing a federal judge? I mean, I just, you know, no disrespect intended. Well, maybe a little, but I just, you know, I feel like I've been bottled up and I can't say what's on my mind. And then you just hear things that aren't true coming from someone who you expect to get it right. And it's just too much to bear. I wouldn't be good in court. You know, I would be trying to say something that I guess I'm not allowed to say.
Well, I don't know. I think with some discipline, you'd probably, and I don't mean to insult you, but you'd probably make a pretty good lawyer.
Well, yeah, shock therapy is very effective, and I do know that my behavior could be modified.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, we live in a country where you can still speak your mind about any kind of federal official. And that's exactly what you did. And I think that, as Jose Pellieri indicated in his article, that, you know, what had happened is certainly subject to lots of different types of criticism. And let's not forget that during the dependency of Virgil's case, it had come out that certain bits of evidence that were collected through search warrants of his were being made accessible to the wider FBI.
Yeah, what was that all about? That was never brought up.
This is something that, unfortunately, when Virgil pleaded to this, this really was no longer an issue in his case. But if I recall correctly, the government did make the representation to the court that it would follow up with the court based on a wider investigation to determine the extent of the different types of evidence that were being accessed through this erroneously configured Palantir system. And I believe Palantir, again, if I recall correctly, had indicated that this wasn't designed improperly, but had been configured improperly. But we don't know. To my knowledge, there hasn't been an update about this. It would be great to learn a bit more. And I think that, frankly, I think it would be great if the court had inquired of the government what was happening in that particular matter, in that issue in Virgil's matter, before sentencing.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe some other case will bring it up, but, it just seemed like this case was designed to be a headline, to be a lesson, and it didn't matter, you know, about facts. They could just be manipulated in various ways.
Yeah, it took long enough to cook this up.
It sure did.
Yeah, a couple of years, get it looking just right.
I mean, think about that. This has been going on since late 2019, you know, Thanksgiving when they... Yeah, it just shows you the callousness of it. He's on his way from Singapore to visit his family on the East Coast, and that's when they grab him, you know, after he's talked to them, after he's told them everything he knows and offered to help them, that's when they start making his life a living hell. And since that day in 2019, it's now 2022, 3 years of hell equals 10 months in their eyes, and another 5 years to go. It's crazy. Of course, you know, I know Virgil is going to make the most of it, and I know he's going to be strong and inspirational. And if anyone can get something positive out of what's ahead. It's him. I'm just pissed off because, you know, I want him to be outside. I want him to be, you know, able to enjoy himself and to share his knowledge and learn things from the rest of us. You know, I feel that way whenever something bad happens to any of my friends. And this is one of the worst things. One of the worst, because you just hear the lies and you realize people aren't getting it. They don't want to get it. They're not listening. They're not trying to see who he really is. Yeah, Alex.
Let me make something clear here, too, because we didn't discuss this during the show. Maybe we should have. But, you know, when Virgil pleaded to this on the 27th of September last year, that was a very, very painful and emotional day for him. I mean, you could feel the pain in his voice in pleading to the charge, and it was hard for him. You could see it. It was rough. Yesterday, Virgil was very strong. I mean, he sat there. He looked up at the judge. He looked at the prosecution. He didn't flinch. He wasn't even emotional. He stood there and he admirably took the sentence that was meted out to him. And the sense, I think, you know, it was what he expected, given the position of the government and how the case had gone up until that point. I think there was some hope, but this was all within the realm of expectation. And I was watching him. I was right there in the front row with his parents, sitting right next to his mother and his father. And Virgil was strong. He stood up, he was sat upright, he looked everybody in the eye, and you could tell that this is somebody who has a seriousness of purpose, who will go and do what is expected of him, and will come out even stronger. I have no doubt in my mind, and I told him as much as that as well. So I think he's come a long way as a person during this whole ordeal. I'm not saying that, you know, he wasn't a good person before or anything, but I think this has certainly changed him in a lot of ways. And he is going to continually get stronger through this process.
Yeah, I find it interesting that beforehand and prior to this, he had been really trying to get this technology to so many different parts of the world, places in need. I remember, you know, I met him a couple times. I knew him from hacker events, of course, and your relationship, Emmanuel, and of course. He would be stopping in town. So, yeah, I remember him talking about going to places that had been disaster-ridden and trying to implement this technology, going to places where people didn't have the ability to process transactions and could make use of this, and outside of all kinds of systems, capitalist, governmental, working ad hoc, building stuff, and I think him not being involved is a real loss. You know, there was a story recently, too, about what was the deal with Ethereum being sort of distanced early on, and then I think there was some statements recently. I don't know if anybody has any updates about that, but it just seems like they were also afraid to say, yeah, this is the kind of thing we want to be behind. This is the kind of place that could use this for good, because of the harshness of sanctions.
Well,
and
let's just be clear, though. He wasn't advocating for North Koreans to be, other than theoretically, to be evading sanctions and using cryptocurrency. He obviously was helping those countries that are facing disasters, and in our own country, Puerto Rico being one of them. It was in his blood to figure out how to make a system work. In this particular case, North Korea was very different than, say, Haiti, Puerto Rico, or, other impoverished places that were dealing with disasters. This was something that was, more of a political type thing, but it was a mental exercise.
And he'd never been, right? It was curiosity.
Exactly. And if he wanted to do that, he could have easily hidden everything that he was up to. He didn't have to tell anybody. You can go to North Korea and nobody will ever know. I'm telling you that right now. This is how you do it. You go to China, and from China you go to North Korea. There's no visa in your passport. There's no record of it any place. You just need to have an invitation from North Korea, which is fairly easy to arrange. And when you're back, your passport will not show anything. So unless you tell somebody that you went there, nobody will know. He told everybody. He told the U.S. government. He was wanting to share what he learned. And that was his mistake, being open. So what message does that send?
Yeah, I think you're right. That wasn't emphasized enough, that he was bringing back a lot more from there. And it's sad, even, like, I think he's not going to be able to contribute and continue to be a part of that community and do work that way is one thing. But to think he hasn't even really been able to process what he did find out when he was presenting there, the kinds of questions, the things that people were asking. I'm sure he's thought about it personally, but this has been just surviving in this case has preoccupied what he was doing there and trying to learn and share and do for himself. You know, that this became the focus because of the ends that I think the prosecution and the those investigating were seeking.
And the fact that it was mentioned yesterday that there were co-conspirators that he was talking to. Alex, what does that mean? Why didn't they go after these co-conspirators? Were they just trying to send a message with Virgil? What does that say to you, that there are these other people that they say were plotting with Virgil?
First let me say, I don't want to, and I don't think any of us are encouraging anybody to go to North Korea. You know,
I'm simply saying how it is, how easy it is to do that and not tell anybody.
We're not encouraging anybody to go and, you know, violate sanctions on North Korea or do anything like that. But I, with respect to the co-conspirators, sure. I think I can't recall exactly from the papers, but I think there were five or six co-conspirators, and they were described. I want to be very careful about how I address that, because some of this, obviously, I know who they are, but you know, there are various reasons why they haven't been charged in this case, and some of them may be, you know, outside the reach of jurisdiction, things like that. Mm-hmm. There are a number of reasons.
It seems to me they don't really care. Am I right in saying that?
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't characterize it as that. I think that they care about it, but I think that the facts and circumstances surrounding the other co-conspirators are materially different than Virgil's mm-hmm. situation. I need to be, you know, careful about how I address that, though.
Okay. Well, just it really seems like they were focusing primarily on him, and that's the message they wanted to send. Also, I should point out, it's not a violation of sanctions to visit North Korea. It's a violation of Trump's decree, where basically he said, you know what, I don't want anybody from America going to North Korea except me. When I went to North Korea, I went as a European citizen, but I could have gone as an American citizen, and it would not have been a violation of the sanctions at all. It's different than Cuba, where they make it much more difficult, or they did make it much more difficult for you to go there. In any way, but North Korea was easy to get to before Trump, and I don't know why it hasn't reverted back. It should. It should still be easy for people to visit any place in the world, I think.
Yeah, and what's in place right now is still that Trump-based travel ban on North Korea. So going there would in fact, you know, be a violation of the law, and we don't encourage people to violate the travel ban.
If you're an American citizen, if you're a Canadian, if you're a Brit, you know, anyone else basically can go there.
Exactly.
Right. It's important to remember that was not in effect when, I know it's probably immaterial, but when Virgil was there. This was
no, it wasn't in effect. Trump's decree was in effect.
Did it occur
yeah.
right when he was it right
it was,
before?
It was shortly before. I'm not sure exactly if it was a year or less. But
he wasn't really tapped into that because he was living.
He lived in Singapore. He didn't come to the United States very often. He lived in Singapore. He was very close to North Korea geographically. Imagine, you know, the silliness of saying, oh, my God, you know, Trump says I can't do this, even though it's so easy for me to do this.
He said a lot of stuff.
But then he basically asked permission anyway because he never thought that they would say no. And then they did say no. And, his mistake was doing it anyway. But. Like I said, that shouldn't be a mistake that you pay for so long and in such a horrible way. Hey, let's give out our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. If anyone wants to call in and be part of a conversation or start a different conversation, that's fine with us as well. Didn't mean to spend all night talking about this, but, hey, it's a human life, it's something important, and it's a friend of ours. And I don't really feel like talking about anything else, to be honest, because it's just very upsetting. I wish I could have been there yesterday. We had so many things happening at the same time. It just was impossible physically to get there. But, Alex, what was the courtroom? Were there a lot of people there?
Yeah, it was pretty much packed. And because of the COVID restrictions, there were not even as many seats available as before. And one of the things that I thought was interesting, when you get into the courthouse now, if you don't have a KN95 mask, they will give you one to wear. Everybody had to wear those KN95 masks in the courtroom. And I'll tell you this, I almost missed the entire hearing. And, I came in a little bit late. I alluded to this during the show, but I had traveled to D.C. the day before the hearing to go down for a conference and a dinner, the IAPP conference, and then I had to take a very, very early train back up to New York, a 6:50 a.m. Amtrak train to get back to New York that was supposed to get me in at 9:52 a.m. to Penn Station, and then the hearing would have been at 11, which is way more than enough time to get downtown to the Southern District of New York. I mean, you could walk down there within an hour easily. So I get on the train at 6:50 a.m. and shortly thereafter, I think, right around Wilmington, the conductor makes an announcement that, you may have noticed, but the train is running a little bit more slowly than it ordinarily does. And our max speed is capped I think it was around 79 miles per hour because there was some kind of mechanical failure with the engine.
Oh, dear.
And I said, oh, my God, are you kidding me? So we're losing time the entire way that we're going.
Uh-huh.
And they started announcing, well, there's going to be substantial delays on this train. I'm thinking, oh, my God, are you kidding me? And then they start announcing that there's going to be excessive delays. So we move from substantial then to excessive. And everybody's freaking out on the train because, we've got stuff to do. We're on a 6:50 a.m. train because, you have places you have to be in New York. You don't take that train because – It's a convenient time for you to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So
at some point, the next train is going to pass you too, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
I'm not sure how that works, but there's got to be a train behind you that isn't being delayed.
So then we finally get to Philadelphia, slowly but surely. And then they make an announcement as we're pulling into Philadelphia that they're going to do something with the train's engine. They're going to take the one from the back and put it on the front or it's some kind of fix for this.
They can do that. They can do that. I've seen on the West Coast what they do sometimes when an Amtrak engine fails is they use a Union Pacific freight train engine and just haul the whole thing that way. That happens sometimes. I don't know if they do that on the Northeast Corridor, though.
Well, however they fix it and whatever they do, it takes time. And I estimated that the time to take this to fix this issue would have been 30 to 50 minutes, which means that, definitely going to take over an hour if they're estimating up to 50 minutes.
Why couldn't they just put you on another train? They have trains there in Philadelphia. I see them parked all the time.
Yeah. That wasn't what they intended to do. That wasn't what they were planning to do. So then if there was a 50-minute delay on top of all the other delays and we're leaving Philadelphia that late, there's no way that I was going to get to New York in time to see even probably – the last 10 minutes of the hearing. So I start freaking out. I was looking at the timetable and the schedules. What the hell can I do? Talking to the conductor. Turns out there was a regional train that was following us, that was behind us.
You took SEPTA?
No, it was still Amtrak.
Oh, okay. I thought you took local transit. Because you can do that. Yeah. You could take SEPTA up to Trenton and then get on the New Jersey Transit train to Penn Station.
Well, that would have been interesting.
It's slow and it's cheap, but it does get you there.
Yeah, so I hopped off the train in Philadelphia, and the regional train was leaving in 9 minutes. It
okay.
had arrived, and it was leaving in 9 minutes, so I was able to get a ticket, book a ticket, get back on the regional train, and then get into Penn Station around 10:45.
Hang on. What do you mean you had to get a ticket? You already had a ticket. Why couldn't you use that ticket?
Can't use that same Amtrak ticket to get on a different train. I had to pay a new fee.
That's wrong. No, I'm sorry. That's wrong, especially if it's their fault.
Well, of course. I mean, I'm going to try to contest this.
I'll represent you in Amtrak court, which I can do, by the way. You can't, but
yeah.
I can.
And this is another story we can get into today. I was a defendant in court today, and I can talk about that a little bit later.
Wait, you were a defendant, not a lawyer?
I was. That's right. I was representing myself pro se. Well, we can get into that later.
Okay. You've had an interesting day.
Yeah, I definitely did. Yeah. So I get in. Well, I'm poised to get into New York at 10:45, which is still not enough time for me to get right down to the Southern District of New York in 15 minutes, you know, for the hearing to start. But at least I will have only missed a few of it, right?
Uh-huh.
So I get on the regional train, I sit next to this guy, and then I get a CNN alert about the attack that had occurred in Brooklyn. And I think to myself, oh, my God, now this has happened here, right? So when I pull into Penn Station, the subways are snarled. That's very difficult. And because the subways are snarled, all of the traffic outside is completely snarled up. And I wind up, you know, getting into a cab that's available right out of Penn Station. The guy is Russian, barely speaks any English, and doesn't really know where he's going. I had to use Waze to tell him the most efficient way to get down there. And you know, this took about a half an hour or something to get down to the Southern District, and it should have taken, you know, 10 minutes, or 15 maybe at the most, but it was a crazy situation, and then I had to go through the metal detector. It's a little bit expedited for attorneys, but finally got up to the Southern District in the courthouse around 11:15 or 11:20.
Wait, after all that, you're only 15 minutes late?
After that, I was only 15 minutes late, and it was insanely stressful because, you know, this is obviously a very important hearing. It's why I, you know, traveled back and forth to D.C. in a single day in less than 24 hours, and something I've been working on for quite a while. And to see an Amtrak malfunction about to screw up, you know, your entire ability to get there, and, you know, and more importantly, you want Virgil to see you there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it knows that you care and that, you know, he has your support, especially as, you know, one of his quote-unquote representatives.
So he got to see you burst through the door and your briefcase fell open and all the papers on the floor and everyone laughed. It was a lighthearted moment.
Well, because I was the latest person to come in.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking around for a seat and there were no seats. Every single seat was taken. And then one of the marshals said to me, if you can't find a seat, you're going to have to leave.
Wow.
I said, well, you know, there's no way I'm not finding a seat after that ordeal. So I walked straight up to the front of the galley. I saw that there was an open seat, probably a little bit too close for comfort, for maybe, you know, COVID, but it was right next to Virgil's mom and dad. And, you know, I went over there. They recognized me despite the KN95 mask. I gave them a hug and sat down next to them, and nobody bothered me. So I got there.
Quite an entrance, Alex.
Yeah, it was definitely an entrance. And let me tell you, I mean, you just can't rely on Amtrak, to get
there. Well, look, this happens on any mode of transit, you know, airplanes certainly and buses. But Amtrak people are amazing people, and they always are trying to help you in one way or another. And if more money was just poured into that infrastructure, you wouldn't have these kinds of problems. Maybe we could have actual high-speed rail, and you could get from D.C. to New York in a couple of hours, and, you know, like other countries.
Yeah, I mean, look, that would be great, you know, if it was more efficient and more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this happens to you one too many times, and you don't want to take it anymore. Then you may want to start taking flights, and I hate taking flights.
Yeah, well, tell me how that works out, Alex. So tell me about the streamlined service that you get by getting on, jam-packed onto a sardine can.
Yeah, there should be a more reliable and efficient way to get between New York and D.C. I'm telling you, you know, driving is horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Trains can be unreliable. Flying is like the logistics of it are just too, I want to say, you know, torturous to deal with. Yeah, because you're flying out of LaGuardia. And LaGuardia
flying's not going to get any better. They're not going to make planes go any faster. And highways are going to be congested. Trains can be improved. The rail can be improved. The speed can be improved. And that's what I hope that that happens. We have a caller. Hopefully we still have a caller. I didn't hear the phone ring, Kyle. I guess we're on silent mode, but we do have somebody who's been patiently waiting.
Yeah, it was, but it's back on now.
It's back on now. Okay, so we will hear the gentle sound of the phone ringing. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Thank you for waiting.
Hello, it's Philip from Missouri. How are you guys?
Hey, what's up?
Nothing much. Sorry to hear about Virgil and everything.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I have a question about that, though. If he had held that presentation like virtually instead of being there in person, would he have faced any kind of repercussions for that?
Interesting question. What do you think about that, Alex? What if he had done it from his house? What if he had answered questions from people in North Korea at his house?
This is a fact situation that I have considered numerous times, you know, and in different permutations as well. You know, what if the situation were perhaps that, let's say he was giving a presentation in Geneva, and there happened to be a North Korean in the audience,
mm-hmm.
and that singular North Korean person was able to derive some kind of benefit from what he said, similar to what the government's case, the theory of their case was that there was one individual, and remember the stipulation was that what Virgil said and did in North Korea did not give them any additional capabilities that they did not already have, but there were certain individuals in the audience who benefited from that. So I think Phil is absolutely right to bring up this analogy. It's something I've thought about many times over since last summer, and I don't know the answer to it. I mean, I think based on the government's theory, you would have the same result, that you have benefited somebody in North Korea. The difference being, though, is what Judge Castell focused on in his pronouncement at the end of the hearing, which was the intentionality component of this. If you unintentionally help somebody who, you know, may be North Korean in your audience, that seems to me as being less morally culpable than intentionally going there and intentionally speaking to certain people. I think that's what the distinction under the law would be, the difference between something that was an intentional act and an unintentional consequence of an innocent act.
But what if, you know, you're over there in North Korea, and as it was said in the judge's own statements, he was helping people, not representatives of the North Korean government. If you believe that these people out there are innocent people that aren't affiliated with an evil regime, would that not, by this logic, be an excuse to say that your intentions were good?
No, not given the blanket sanctions that apply to North Korea as a whole.
So just because they're North Koreans, and he answered their questions and benefited them as a result, that is reason enough.
Well, I think it could be. Mm-hmm. I think the context is what would drive a decision here. You know, if you were at, it was a blockchain conference, and the audience was known to be, you know, people that worked in I guess the technology sector or the government, things like that. If you were talking at a Care Bear convention or something like that, then I think that, you know, and you happen to mention something about cryptocurrency, and it may be, you know, depending upon the intention and your knowledge of what the audience was, and, you know, maybe that could work the same result. But I think to Phil's point, and to your point as well, Emmanuel, there are lots of permutations of the fact patterns here that call into question the legitimacy of the government's theory.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, caller?
Well, here's another thing. Like, say, for instance, he did the whole presentation as like a TED Talk that was put on YouTube, right? Because that's basically what this sounds like. It's just like something that would be in a TED Talk, right? Say, for instance, a North Korean saw it on YouTube. What would happen? I mean, anything or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same situation here, right? You know, you can have, there are all of these streaming platforms, and if they're accessible to somebody else, but I think it goes back to this notion of what was intended by the act, you know, and the greater the intentionality, the greater the level of culpability for the act. So intentionality and culpability in mathematical terms would be directly proportional to each other. The less and you know, unintentional consequences, you know, well, rather, if you have an unintentional act that has unintentional consequences, or an intentional act that has unintentional consequences, then there's less culpability for that particular act and its consequences. So I think if you were focusing a YouTube video to a North Korean audience, I think, yeah, certainly, absolutely, a government's theory would probably apply. What if it happened to accidentally reach a North Korean? I think it would be much flimsier, much more tenuous case.
See, it's the whole thing about intent. You know, we understand Virgil's intent. We know him. And to see it misrepresented in court and his sentence basically being decided because of someone else's interpretation of what he intended to do, that's so disturbing and just unsettling.
I think we should have a North Korea track at Hope.
Yeah, something that only gets fed into North Korea. You know, even joking about that, I we could probably get in trouble in this climate.
I'm not living in that world, no.
Yeah, okay, let's tell ourselves that. And anything else, caller?
Oh, yeah, you know, been watching the convoy again. This time they got kicked out of this casino.
Wait, are they still out there? The convoy is still out there?
Well, they were pounding the pavement today. They had to go walk around on concrete and hand out flyers, and they didn't like that very much.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people left. One dude left and did a YouTube video how they're not going to reimburse the fuel cost anymore. Another guy went back home to Oklahoma, and he went on a rant about something that turned out to be about a sex crime he did with his sister or something like that.
We don't need to hear that. We don't need to even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird seeing a live stream about that, and he's gotten so paranoid about it, he's been, like, leaving literally live streaming himself sleeping now. But the other guys, the new place they moved to is, like, a place in Manning, California, and it happens to be right next to a nuclear waste dump that one of the streamers just happened upon, just walking around the property, you know, checking the place out. Was looking at some hills and like, oh, there's a sign that says there's radiation here. We shouldn't go here. So it's not going well at all for them. Mike Landis, the leader of it, he just like had a bunch of them like show up at a weigh station. Apparently they just sat there in trucks at a weigh station all day doing nothing. Honking horns maybe once in a while.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the theme of what they do anyway, just not at a weigh station, just honking horns and doing nothing.
I can rent, right now, I can rent for like $50 like a billboard, uh-huh. A digital billboard somewhere that can put the message up at certain times of day, you know?
Uh-huh.
Also, well, you know, just watching this stuff, I ran into something else. Did you know that the Minneapolis Sheriff's Department, or it might be the police department, I can't remember which one, they do this thing called Patrol Live, where they actually live stream their patrols at night.
Okay, that doesn't sound like it could go wrong.
Well, yeah, well, you know, I was watching it because I was like, whoa, I never heard of this. It just showed up in one of the recommended things, I guess, because I'm watching this convoy crap, but...
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I think watching the cops, you know, live would be beneficial.
They took free food from bars. I mean, they actually took free food from bars.
Wow.
There's a couple of domestic disputes from what I saw. One dude said he had a gun and stuff like that, and they thought they were upon a stolen car called the lady driving it didn't know enough to put her tag on the outside
of the
car.
Don't the people that they encounter have to give permission to be broadcast?
You know, I'm not sure. I know they did not put the camera up on them. I guess because of the way body cams are done, I don't think they would have to do that. I think I would count as a dash cam or something like that.
All right.
But, you know, I mean, they have free food. It just... And also, last night on one of these streams, with the Conway thing, they had a... You should see this. There's one called Fry TV where they got, like, 20 screens up of other streamers in every stream. And I'm still doing the... still messing with them up to restreaming them as they gave my ride along. I actually made my way onto Zillow and talked to them a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and they got mad at me.
Yeah, they'll do that.
Some questions about stuff. Huh?
Well, they'll do that. They'll get mad if they don't recognize somebody on Zillow.
Yeah, I started playing the Conway song, you know, that old...
Yeah, from the 70s.
Song from the 70s. They
right.
got mad and kicked me off for that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, another thing I ran into is like something called Texas Storm Chasers, where they're professional storm chasers.
So yeah, they chase tornadoes. They do some interesting things.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I thought it was cool from what I could see of it. Oh, something just showed up on CNN too. Shooting suspect called in tip that led to his arrest.
Yeah, he did. The subway shooter turned himself. Well, he gave the tip that turned himself in. I guess he gets the reward now. Is that how it works?
I guess.
Yeah.
He used for his bail.
Uh huh. Right. Yeah, it's smart. But interesting couple of days in New York.
Did anybody dial for me yet? Or I mean, I know it's a kind of wrong question to ask, but.
Don't know.
You know, it's been a while since I've been in New York. I was there in 2015 or whatnot. But do they still have the National Guard hanging out in the subways? Or?
I believe so in some places. I haven't been in that region for a little while, but I think they're still there.
Yes, there are a lot of different agencies that cooperate and coordinate in various locations all over Manhattan. Everyone from the State Patrol to the National Guard to NYPD to MTA-PD, and especially when people are setting off smoke bombs in the subway.
Yeah, yeah, there's a bunch of that.
Well, yeah, this happened in Brooklyn, though. I mean, I remember going to the Bronx and I didn't see anybody.
Uh-huh.
Again, I got up at Yankee Stadium, and I saw the biggest rat nut I ever saw in my life there. The size of a cat, and it's like, oh, my God, it's true. But, yeah, I mean, just hanging there with that. What we need best for the cyber crimes and whatnot is just... an educated legislative and judicial system. We definitely need a cyber court to deal with all this stuff. As far as the travel ban thing, I don't know how... The only thing I could think of, you could have done it without getting in trouble, is like doing it virtually.
Right.
But I don't know if that would count as doing like transaction stuff or something like that. With sanctions, I mean, if I was to make the phone call, right, to North Korea, would I get in trouble for that, or?
I don't think so, but it's hard to do in the first place.
Yeah, we just need to go out there and vote for people who actually know what they're doing and try to change some of this stuff. Also, did you hear about California trying to pass a law to make a work week 32 hours?
I did not hear about that.
Yeah, I heard about it on Kimmel the other night.
Uh-huh.
Something else for corporate America to get mad at everybody about.
Wow. All right, listen, we're going to move on to another phone call. But thanks.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks for calling in. No, don't apologize. We're happy to hear from you.
Keep listening.
Yeah, our phone number 802-321-4225. And we're going to hear the phone this time, I believe, if it does ring. 802-321-HACK on for a few more minutes. And there it is, just like clockwork. Are we connected? Okay. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi, Emmanuel.
It's Rebel. How you doing?
Yeah. kind of still disappointed that I can't go to Russia, but...
Oh, okay, so wait, you decided not to go to Russia. That's news.
Well, it's not that I decided not to go. It's just the logistics of it is just, you know, it'll be just too much.
That is a decision. You made a decision. You made a good decision.
Right, well, maybe next year. Well, the visa's good for 3 years. You know, I got the visa, and, you know, it's still in the process of getting the visa. It's good for 3 years. Well, if I can't go this year, maybe I'll go next year.
I didn't know it lasted 3 years. Wow. That's amazing.
Well, and then if I can't go next year, then maybe I could go the next year.
I thought it lasted 3 months, but maybe I'm wrong.
That's really smart, Rebel, because you're keeping your options open.
Right. Now, how did you go to North Korea and Cuba and all when you couldn't exchange money and they don't take American credit cards? How did you do it?
When I went to North Korea, first of all, I went as a European citizen because I have a European passport, but I could have gone as an American citizen. It was open at that point.
Not everybody has that option.
As what? To go as...
Had different passports.
Yeah, but I could have gone as an American. My point is I could have gone as American, too. It was open to Americans up until Trump. And all you had to do was go to China and meet up with the people that ran the tour group, and they would fly you over, and you were there.
I hate to be a pest. You just randomly chose the European one. Tell me you didn't consciously say, you know what, I don't want to use this option. I'm choosing chocolate because I don't want to choose vanilla.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. You know, why choose one or the other? I mean, obviously you're
motivated.
Why
did I choose using my European passport instead of my American passport?
I'm saying some people don't have options. You had the option. You chose one.
I chose the option. Yes.
Right. But say you're one... With your only option is the one you didn't choose. That's what I mean. Not everybody has the option. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, look, it's like you have standard and then you have deluxe, and you choose standard. Come on, the European passport is better for going into that country because you're trusted more as a European citizen than an American citizen. But my point is that I didn't have to do that. I could have gone as an American. And I wouldn't have been able to take the train out of the country. That was one of the options that Europeans had that Americans did not have. They had to fly in and out. But once you got there, I believe all the expenses were taken care of by the travel agency. You paid them, and they covered all your meals and travel and all that. So you weren't actually exchanging money with people in North Korea. So I think that's how they got around that.
Okay. Now, what about Cuba?
Cuba was a little bit more complicated because we were able to go as journalists. The American government was happy with that. And unfortunately, in Cuba, they don't like journalists. So there was this weird gap between my status when I left and my status when I arrived. There were a few questions being asked in Havana when I got there, and they seemed to be sort of fixating on, how are you a tourist that flew in from Florida when tourism isn't allowed? But eventually the tour guide, the person that was basically in charge of transporting people to hotels, got so impatient she started yelling at the customs guy, and he got intimidated and just kind of let me go. So it was that simple. So somehow I was able...
How about money and using, you know, you can't use credit cards there.
I think, I don't remember this was a number of years ago, but I'm pretty sure that when you have a reason to go there, you obviously have to pay for things like food and a place to stay. I think that's allowed if you're allowed in the country. You're not able to make, you know, massive gifts and purchase homes or things like that. But
like paying for hotels, you can't use an American Express card or a Visa card to pay for a hotel or use, you know, like a their currency to pay for like a subway ride or a snack or whatever. How did
right.
You do
well,
that?
We probably, again, this was a while ago, probably had to exchange currency. There are two different kinds of currency. There is a currency for people who lived in Cuba, and there's a currency for people who did not live in Cuba, and totally different prices depending on which you were. But like I said, because if you qualify to go there as a particular, in my case, a journalist, you're able to spend money there. Just, you know, not an extravagant amount, but enough to get by.
I wonder if the Soviet, you know, like back in the Soviet days, like in before the 90s, there was a thing called interest where if U.S. citizens wanted to visit the Soviet Union, they could go through this tourist agency. I guess I wonder how they did that with the ruble.
Yeah, there are similar things in Belarus, I'm pretty sure. So if you want to go back to the Soviet Union, try Belarus. Well, don't try it now. After all these shenanigans are over.
Well, no, I mean, you still need a visa to get to Belarus also.
And you can get imprisoned in Belarus. If you take a train from Poland and you wind up in Belarus, they will throw you in prison if you don't have a visa. So be careful.
I'm glad I'm not going to. I don't think I'm going to go anywhere this year. And maybe the Hope Conference will be my highlight.
There you go. That's the right thinking.
The Belarusian passport is installed in your passport.
You mean the visa?
I'm sorry, yeah, visa. The Belarusian visa to get into the country is affixed to your passport.
You know, crazy thought here. There's nothing wrong with getting a visa. I mean, get a Belarusian visa, get a Russian visa. Just don't go. Fill your passport with visas. Why not? That's a nice, safe way to travel. Except you're not going anywhere.
Well, you know, for European, let's say I went to Portugal and European Union and Germany and London and Paris and... You know, I went to Ukraine like 2 years ago, and
But you're mentioning unions and countries and cities. Europe is comprised of all of that. So, yeah.
But I'm saying I went to Ukraine 2 years ago. You know, just Ukraine 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It was a different place then.
Yeah, but I'd like to this year go to Poland and Italy and Switzerland and Ireland.
No reason you can't.
I know I can. I mean, well, it's a lot of money, and I'd like to save it for, you know, other events. I'd like to go to odd countries. Like, you know, I'd like to visit, like, Europe and the common countries that people visit, but
Rebel,
odd countries like...
It's costly, but don't get into that trap, because that is the most common reason Americans say they can't go somewhere, or they don't have time, or that it's too expensive. That is made up. That is like resort travel or like all inclusive, that kind of thing. It does not have to be expensive if you don't make it expensive.
Yeah, and there's tricks too.
You know, but I like to enjoy the finer things in life.
Well, of course you do, but you know,
you're not like.
No, he's high class.
But it's not the lion's share of your trip.
There's certain things, like if you ride an overnight train, well, then you don't have a place, you don't have to worry about a hotel room because you're sleeping on the train. You have a room on the train, so that you get your travel and your accommodations. Like, you know, we took the QM2 across the damn Atlantic Ocean. That took like 7 or 8 days. And you might say, oh, you took an ocean liner, but if you divide what we spent on it by what we would spend in a hotel for each one of those nights and the travel, it's not that much. So it depends on how you think about it.
And also, Rebel, just putting this out there, when you go places, you can often, you know, spend money in places where the exchange rate is to your advantage. You're supporting, you're going to a strange place, you're supporting the economy there a little bit, you're learning about it, and many of the places when we were visiting former Yugoslavia, countries that were a part of that, many times we would be like amazed at just the quality and how good people were to you, the hospitality that was extended to you, even though you're from a far flung place or you know, you're not completely like familiarized with the area. That stuff is so priceless when you're traveling, and those little ways to be smart about it can really make it quite affordable.
I remember as a child, there was some kind of, it was an airline or a travel agency or somebody that was advertising going to Europe and talking to those people who would always make excuses. And their line, their pitch was, you know, if you keep making excuses, every year you make excuses for not going to Europe because it's too expensive, because you think you can't afford it, you're 1 year closer to never going. It was such a dark way of selling travel to Europe, but it was effective.
But we hear it a lot, especially with people that are professionals. They work, you know, in you know, regular hours and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, I just can't get away. I can't get away from the holiday or from families and this and that.
Oh, the job, you know, sometimes.
All of those things, they're valid, but cost shouldn't be it, because there are so many cool things you can do to make it worth your while or make it work for your situation.
Well,
that's all I'm saying. Don't let it bar you from travel.
Look at what you're not spending here when you're over there, especially if you're able to rent out, you know, your apartment or your house or something while you're away. and then apply that to travel. But Rebel, you know, what I would suggest, if you're looking for interesting places to go, try former Yugoslavia, like Kyle mentioned, because that's a bunch of really unique, different countries. And it is cheap as hell. I mean, you will find quality hotel rooms for like, you know, $40 or something. Food is plentiful and cheap and good. And there are just so many different places to explore. They're all different.
Right. And I would never go on a cruise. I don't think I would want to sleep on a boat or sleep on a train. I mean, like, you know, things like that.
You should try at least the trains. You know, they're quite comfortable.
I never slept on like a room in a train.
You should try it. You want adventure? That's adventure.
Well, you mean taking Amtrak like across the United States?
Well, we've done that a few times, but I'm talking about in Europe where they actually, you know how to do it well. You can get a really nice room and it's very comfortable, and you go right to sleep on the rail.
Or you test the waters there. A little pun for you.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Liverpool to Belfast ferry? That was overnight.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to take.
That's a short one.
All right.
Easily, that was a great one. That would be really fun.
When you take that, get a room. Or the Hook of Harwich ferry that goes from England to Netherlands. That's an overnight ferry too. That's you can get a room on that one.
No, I was going to tell you, I was going to fly into Ireland and then go from Dublin to like northern England or central England on a boat that takes like 3 or 4 hours across the like English
mixing.
Channel or whatever it's
called. Well, there's a faster boat too, but you know, they actually brought back the slow boat because people were complaining it wasn't as much fun. So that gives you an idea of the spirit of travel. Something else you could do, you could drive to Nova Scotia, a place called Sydney, and get on a ferry there. Get on a ferry there and take it to St. John's, Newfoundland. That's an overnight ferry, and you know, it's you can do the whole thing just by driving.
But I have been to Newfoundland. I mean, no, I haven't been to Nova Scotia. Never to Newfoundland. But
I think last week you said you were in Newfoundland, so you must have meant Nova Scotia.
But mixing and matching.
Probably Nova Scotia.
Yeah, Newfoundland. You should check out.
Nova Scotia. Yeah, because Newfoundland's an island.
Mm-hmm. They're similar. Newfoundland used to be its own country, and in fact, TV and radio stations there still begin with V. Some of them.
Make sure you try different modes, though. That's another great technique, because just you get to put a little bit of space in between your connections, but you go from one mode of transport, and you just it kind of keeps you moving, keeps you traveling, that pace will. I think it's something that travelers grow to enjoy.
Now I want to travel. Damn it, Rebel! You made me get into a traveling mode. Alex, do you have any advice for Rebel on his potential journeys here?
Oh, I think you guys have nailed it mostly. You know, I can certainly attest to the fact that you can travel on the cheap. I mean, I have been all over Western Europe, into parts of Eastern Europe, just taking trains, staying in hostels, you know, literally living off dollars per day. You know, not very recently, of course, but, you know, back in the 90s and in the early 2000s. I mean, I even was in Russia in 1999. And just, you know, I think back at it, too. I was about, you know, 20 years old and, you know, flew with a friend of mine and my girlfriend into Moscow. And we didn't really have a plan. We knew we wanted to get to St. Petersburg and then maybe go into the Baltic states and we're just sort of figure it out from there. And we had a few weeks. And so, you know, we just, with no smartphones, no GPS, nothing but a guidebook, got on a plane, went to sleep, and landed in Moscow.
Why did you fly into St. Petersburg if that's where you wanted to go?
Well, we wanted to go to Moscow first.
Oh, okay.
We wanted to travel up to St. Petersburg and then go from there either to the Baltic states or into Scandinavia. And we did it. And we did it really, really on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to make our way around, you know, Russia without any GPS and not really speaking the language. I could speak a bit, but, you know, it was pretty awesome. And I have some of my best memories and best stories from these crazy times where that were completely unscripted. You just had a destination, and you figure it out as you go. It's still my favorite way to travel.
They totally stick with you, the memories. I mean, I was just thinking about Bratislava the other day. You remember the places you ate, you know, or you know,
Slovakia,
you traipsed
yeah.
in you, the first night where you're trying to get your bearings, and what the town was like once you got more familiar with it.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you first arrive in a place, it's completely different than the next day when you wake up and start exploring it. It seems alien and hostile. And then you become really familiar with it. You know, we felt that way in Sarajevo. We took a bus from Croatia and wound up in Sarajevo. And it was so intimidating when we arrived there at night and we had no idea where we were. And then the next day it was the most incredible thing, just going through this huge market with people from all different parts of the country, all different religions. It was really cool. It was one of the most amazing moments.
What I like about Russia is I see videos of everything, like the food service, like the McDonald's and the restaurants and the cafes. They're all clean. It's like in a picture perfect clean. Like you see videos of like Russia and probably other countries too in Europe and in Western Europe. It's so clean, like the McDonald's. And unlike here in the United States, where people don't care about cleanliness.
Well, hold on a second. Hey, you know, that may be the case for like Switzerland or the Netherlands or something like that. But I can tell you, there are parts of Russia that are very, very dirty, and also London and even Paris. They have dirt.
Yeah, I know, but you know, well, my plan was to go to Ireland and see Ireland a little, and then go take a boat to England. And then like drive up to like Scotland and not drive up, but take a bus or train up to Scotland.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Have you ever driven on the other side of the road?
That's why I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try.
No, you should try. It's surprisingly easy. It really is. You just adapt. You'll be surprised. And oftentimes
right.
you have to drive a standard too. So you're shifting with one hand
I know
shifting's harder.
Yeah, I know that's right. Yes. And then I was going to go to Switzerland and, you know, go to Switzerland and see Switzerland. Then I was going to go to like, you know, maybe Italy and Rome and then, you know, Poland. But it's going to cost like $6,000 for all this.
Oh, no. It should not cost anything like that. It really shouldn't.
Get your train book.
Yeah.
Get your budget for train tickets.
You know, you should get the train book, like Kyle suggested. I forget what it used to be, the Thomas Cook train timetable.
The European Rail.
Just look up the European Rail timetable. It's a book, comes out every month, and you can just have a copy sent to you, and it's, you know, the times usually stay about the same throughout the year. What is it? It's the European Rail timetable. It's published every month. It used to be called the Thomas Cook European Rail timetable. Get this book, even if you don't go anywhere. If you study this, you'll see all the possibilities, and it's really fascinating.
Right, but I'm not going to take the train from London, England to Switzerland. I mean,
you can.
Actually, you probably can.
You absolutely can. You take a Eurostar,
and even the best plans
can't
account for maybe some change. Maybe there's a reason you want to stay somewhere longer. If you have a resource at your fingertips where you can just flip through it. That doesn't rely on cell service or foreign, you know, SIMs and stuff. You can just flip through it, change your plans, go get the tickets, make your arrangements, and all of a sudden you're traveling with a different itinerary on the fly. Because
so
you never know.
You don't have to worry about airlines, like going through the airlines and changing things. Like, you know, I fly from London to Switzerland on, like, Swiss Air and then Switzerland
to
the country.
Rebel, there's a great website I'm going to give you right now. You got a pen? You might already know it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's called seat61.com. Okay, seat61.com. It's a thorough guide to rail systems all around the world, including prices and possibilities. And you just basically click on any country. This guy will explain how their trains work, how you connect to them, how you get the cheapest ticket. It's just fascinating to read. Even if you don't go, it's fascinating to read this.
Mm.
So check that out.
Okay. And there are buses, too, that you can, you know.
I don't know much about buses, but, yeah, there are buses. That's about all I know. All right, Rebel, we're gonna move on because there are other people who might want to get through, and we're almost done tonight. But keep us updated.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
I admire his enthusiasm, you know, and I hope he gets to travel a lot. I hope we all do. All right. The calls are coming in fast and furious. I can't see the screen, Kyle. It doesn't matter. We're going to pick up no matter who it is, so it's not like it's a guest pass or something like that.
I almost hung up.
Because of who they are?
No, I hit the wrong button because I was trying to show you some information. I like to give you the area code, at least a little hint about where the call is coming from.
Yeah, unfortunately, that caller ID device, when you pivot it, the light glares off it.
I know, it's not backlit.
It's terrible.
Old school.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Seriously?
Yeah, you're seriously on.
Well, hey, Emmanuel, it's great to hear from you and talk to you. This is your old friend, Pam.
Hi, Pam.
I'm calling into old... Hey, man, can I hear your voice? And the whole show was great.
Thank you.
Your old buddy, Red Balaclava, a.k.a. Jeopardy Jim, is really not doing well.
So we heard.
And Alex and Emmanuel, he's much worse. He's like 123 pounds at 6'5". His spirits are good. I sent you all his actual phone number. You can dial it like an old modem with commas in the middle to get right to his extension and his bed. I thought that would make everybody like giggle a little and then do it.
Is there information you can give to the general public so that?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Then,
he
go
wants
right ahead.
Me too, and I'm happy to read the number right now.
Go right ahead.
Okay, Jim's direct number is 1-718-205-8100. His extension is 405. So you could put comma 405 and get right to his bed, or you can ask the operator for extension 405, or Jim Vichench, that's his last name, it's hard to say, V-I-C-H-E-N-C-H. He doesn't speak very well, but he absolutely understands everything everybody says, and he would love to hear from you guys. Anybody who wants to call him, it doesn't matter who. He's probably only got 2 to 6 months to live. We'll know more at the end of the month. But
that's awful.
Call him, please. Please call him.
Yeah.
He's listening now, too.
Oh, he is.
Shout out to Jim.
He's listening to Overtime.
I sent him Chinese food. I always do when he listens to the show. And I was talking to him, and I said, go watch Overtime. He has YouTube. That's what he has. He doesn't have email. They didn't install his Twitter. I'm working with their IT to get it. So we'll get email and Twitter and everything else set up for him within the week. But I was just there, and it's really bad conditions, and I might actually break him out and just take care of him myself. And he's allowed to, so it's okay.
Okay,
but
we won't go into details on that. But thanks for the information as far as just...
Free Jim Vichench, and please call him. Just give him a call, shout out on the show, whatever you can do. He would love to hear from anybody who wants to talk to him. Thank you.
All right, Pam, thank you so much.
Hey, man, thanks for taking the call.
Of course.
It's been a long time.
All right, you take care. Well, that's... So sad to hear. You know, those of you who have listened to the show for a while remember that Jim was a part of the show for a number of years. Back in the early 21st century, I think before that as well, he was at the First Hope. In fact, that's, I think, where we first got to know him as Red Balaclava, the guy who was talking about hacking the MetroCard. And it's been a part of our lives for so many years after that. He had suffered a stroke, continued to come to the radio station, continued to be a part of the hacker community, continued to come to the meetings and to the conferences. And I'm going to hold out hope that there's some kind of miracle that is in store for him. He certainly deserves that, but please reach out if you're able to. Please reach out.
Adding to that, if I could, is, speaking directly to Jim, you know, we love you, we miss you. And I always look fondly on the times, and I thought it was just awesome of him to, when it was so difficult for him to get around and to communicate, to come and meet us for dinner after Off the Hook.
Mm-hmm.
Some really great times where, you know, we're this crazy band of misfits packing into the car, getting it, you know, driving from Brooklyn into Manhattan and walking around, arguing about places to eat and what to drink. And, you know, those were really good times.
I know he still has his independent spirit and so aware of all the things going on around him.
Yeah, I'll just remind everyone, he was the token Republican on Off the Hook.
So he says.
He would remind people often, and I want people to be very clear that he had a very firm political position.
But, you know, I enjoy,
was not afraid to
share. I enjoy talking to him more than other Republicans, so that's why, you know, it's hard to imagine him in that camp.
Our beloved token Republican.
All right, we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Hello?
You're talking to me now.
Yeah, talking to you. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, Eric? This is Adam from Stony Brook Country Corner, WSB, and I'm now in Germany, calling you.
I know who you are. Okay, yes. How you doing?
Very well. This is, I turned on my YouTube, and I saw that Off the Hook Overtime was on.
Uh-huh.
And I figured out the number, and I called you. I haven't thought this through, but here we are. Hello.
How you doing?
Quite all right.
Uh-huh.
This is wild, because I've sent you an email about it, but you're kind of, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about foreign radio stations on WBAI.
Oh, of course, but we're not on WBAI right now. We're on YouTube.
Yeah, it's overtime. Yeah, I started, I'm in Germany, down in Bavaria, and I started my Corona project exactly 2 years ago. It was to start an internet radio station here.
Uh-huh.
And I started alone, and now we have like 40 people making shows.
Oh, wow.
But very often, late night, we play old brain damages.
Oh, my God.
That we download from 2600.
Wow. For those who don't know, Brain Damage is a show that I used to do back in the 1980s and early 90s. And, yeah, it's all available on 2600.com. Boy, how embarrassing.
Yep. I did ask your permission at some point. But, yeah, we play these old brain damage and just let it run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll be talking about the Tawana Brawley case or just the primary election from 1988 or just whatever was going on in the day. And it's wild, or a lot of Satan music, on their, you know.
Uh-huh.
People are here. They love it. It's really just wild.
There was a period where we went Christian for a while. We did Christian brain damage.
Yeah, we played those too, yeah. that was, I felt enlightened. It was wonderful.
Uh-huh. it demonstrates really the fun you can have. The fun you can have with radio. And I think, you know, what the folks over at WUSB, where we still do a show on Tuesdays, they just inspired me to be creative. And a lot of what I do now is a direct result of that when I was in college.
It's been an inspiration for us here. We do a weekly local politics show.
Uh-huh.
That we talk about all the corruption, because corruption's everywhere, even in the promised land of Europe and Germany. Mm-hmm. There's corruption everywhere. You know, we're building a street, but it'll cost $3 million if you let us. You know, same old stuff. But uh-huh. Our opening music to it is still the Philip Glass. Your opening.
Wow.
We used that. We stole it. It's wonderful.
Palakazi, I believe, is where that comes from.
That's the one. But actually, it took one where you threw lots of effects on and echoes and messed with it. Yeah. We cut that out of a brain damage and used that. It's sort of an homage.
That is so amazing to hear that that show lives on after so long, and you know that's why we try to archive everything, because you never know who it's going to speak to years down the road. I know there are people who listen to shows almost randomly, and they send an email to us arguing points that we made 30 years ago or, you know, 10 years ago. And sometimes they say, hey, you were right about this, so this is exactly what happened, and sometimes we're completely wrong. But it's fascinating that it still works. Can you tell people the name of your radio station or whatever you call it?
Yeah, it's called Ghost Town Radio.
Ghost Town Radio.
It's based out of Regensburg, Germany.
Okay.
And ghost-town-radio.de. But we're only on live. We have no archives. It's live or never. But we have a lot of people who just make shows, and we do some live stuff. We do a lot of live stuff. Basically, for 2 years, my apartment was a radio station.
Wow.
And we did almost pirate shows, because everyone had to stay home at night.
Uh-huh.
but we'd still come here and do these shows. It was really weird. And different guests would come, and we'd just hang out all night because you couldn't be on the street after 9 o'clock. It was a lockdown till 5 in the morning.
Right.
So we were stuck from 9 in the morning till 5 in the morning, or 9 at night till 5 in the morning, and we just do radio all night.
It's great. It's an amazing
experience. Calls and and just play music and talk about it. It was wild. It was pretty punk rock.
What's so fantastic about what you're saying is that this is not – there's elements of it that are very very vintage, very old school, kind of I'm hearing like last century stuff about this where it's lockdowns or curfews or, you know, and people are just seeking that comfort in the radio. But what's fascinating, too, is how so many other elements can be connected. I mean, much in the way we have calls here or in the radio stations, but being able to tell those stories to people in all kinds of places over the internet, but also bring in people, bring in stories, bring in other forms of technology things that augment that storytelling is fascinating because we have so much more that we can connect up and do now. So I love that you're playing and exploring this medium.
Well, we did it. Yeah, we did it. You know, we could take calls. I figured out a way to wire that in. And then we could take Facebook calls or whatever. We'd always expand what we could do. And then, you know, we're in Germany. We have shows that are being made from northern Germany and Switzerland and Sweden. Some people jumped in. They found us and made their own show. It's pretty cool.
And you get listeners from all around the world?
Yeah. But most of it's local. Most of it's in Germany. But, you know, you'd be surprised. I can see where there's people who pop in from everywhere. It's cool.
Now, I know you said that you don't keep archives, but you know, you're taking shows from the 1980s that I did and using them. Somebody could do the same thing with you. So I suggest you you keep archives.
I know. I keep archives. I've recorded every second we've ever broadcast.
Oh, good.
But
okay.
Because of the way things are here I can't have archives because then you have to pay. I can't have it on our site.
Because of the hosting, using music, yeah.
Copyrighted music. And Germany is actually really strict with this stuff.
Extremely strict.
Yeah, you notice that on YouTube sometimes things are available in every country except Germany because they have strict laws.
Yeah, it's really bad. But, like, you know, I intend to load, you know, load it up to the Internet Archive, which I'm a big fan of.
Yes.
And just get it up there.
Uh-huh.
Or just make our own archive. We have now just tons of time. That'll come. But right now, it's also my philosophy. The problem, we do radio, and people always ask us, do you have archives? I say no. Because right now, the idea is, you know, you listen live or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as people know, oh, I can listen later, and then I know they won't listen now and they won't listen later.
Okay, yeah.
If we're talking in a time span of weeks, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
That's a valid approach, and it makes people it's a style. I think it's a stylistic choice almost, right?
Oh, definitely, totally. The live warmness of radio. Just we're all talking to each other. We're all here. It's a shared experience. And there's not that much left of that in the world these days. So,
very true. Very true.
We catch it together or we don't catch it at all. And then, you know, in a few years, I'll load it up. You know, I'll get it out there. But right now, day to day, because I really believe, yeah, as soon as people know, yeah, you can listen to it at your convenience, then their convenience is never.
Interesting, because that is how a lot of stations operate. They do have archives, but I see your point where, you know, if you want people to listen live, that might dissuade them from doing that. My only advice is just make sure you have backups of all those archives because, you know, media always goes bad.
I have two hard drives in two different houses.
Good. Okay.
Now, do you do regular scheduling or are there regular programs? Because that may make it also a little bit easier, in other words, places that are archiving, people are maybe can't actually listen to one or the other program in the grid, so to speak.
Well, individual DJs can load, you know, they can do whatever they want with their show, you know, that's fine. But we did a hybrid thing because really we had a really hard lockdown here in Germany. Like it was, or at least in Bavaria, we were the hardest there was. We had 6 months where you could only have one person at your house. Everything was closed for 6 months. Back in fall of 2020 to the spring of 2021. You just couldn't have guests. You couldn't do anything for 6 months. And so we did, our format was I would do live shows out of my place, but everyone else, like, hey, you make a radio show. Send me your hour. Record it. You gotta talk and tell us what music you're playing or whatever you're doing. And you send me a WAV file, and I'll program it in your slot. So basically they were recorded podcasts. But in a schedule that everyone was listening to. And the thing was also because I'm paying the fees for music, we can actually use, because people were using Twitch and YouTube for a little while until they said, nope, copyrighted music, you're out, you know? And so here, everyone, you know, they would do their show, you know, once a week. We'd have the punk rock show and we'd have the grindcore show and all these people, their thing, and they had to, you know, do it like a radio show, but they'd send me the hour and I'd plug it into their hour, you know? And that's how we did it for a long time. And then the live shows would come out of my apartment.
That's great, especially under the circumstance. That really probably complemented what people were going through and that intimacy. And it seems like it's become a real community for you.
Oh, totally. I was shocked. It was really cool. I started really alone. Two friends, three shows. And then in 2 weeks, it was every day. Because people just jumped in.
Uh-huh.
Now they're all addicted.
That's amazing.
They make shows.
You know, maybe someday over there they'll give you a frequency you can broadcast over the actual airwaves.
No. I'd never want one.
You wouldn't want that?
Because here it's so regulated. It's so every 10 minutes I have to tell you what the weather's going to be. It's
really?
There's no, like, free radio freedom here.
I don't know. I mean,
tightly controlled. The
really?
Public airwaves are, it's no fun at all.
I'd like to know more about that because I always had the impression that pretty much every place, you know, you could broadcast more things than you can here in the States. So maybe everyone just has that perception of their country.
Yeah, no, and Germany's terrible.
Huh.
You know, because they really have to make sure they. It's not as free here as on paper it's free, but not at all. The media here is very top down. We'll take care of you. It's, you know, it's all basically BBC stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but that's the public channels.
Else,
what about commercial channels? Are they have to do the same thing?
They're terrible. They're the worst.
Uh-huh.
But they still, you know, every 15 minutes they're going to give you a little bit of news, and they just have to do all this stuff. And
all right, then a pirate frequency. Let's do that. Just not obey any rules.
I'd love to, man, but I'm not messing with it. They'll find me in a heartbeat, man.
That's true, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Right now, the internet works. You can throw it on your cell phone. You can. I do love the idea of real radio where you can hear it wherever you are. It's in the air around you. But right now with Wi-Fi and just with cell phone stuff, you can listen wherever you are, man.
That's true. And you know what? You can rebroadcast it over your airwaves somewhere. So that's always the magic of radio.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, and that's the thing over here in Germany. They don't really have a community radio tradition.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that. And that's why a lot of people jumped in. They were like, what, I can just do a show?
Yeah.
You know, whatever I want? I'm like, yeah. So I can play whatever I want? I'm like, yeah.
That's really cool.
You just have to talk. It's not a Spotify playlist. You have to talk and, you know, tell us why and, you know,
so,
give it a personality.
So, Adam, I'm going to ask you, to give out the...
There's none of that. They don't have the bottom of the dial college. They don't have that here at all.
I'm going to ask you to give out the address one more time and tell us, are you on the air 24-7 or what hours you are?
Not at all.
Okay, so what hours
not
can people hear you?
We're right now on a week because I do everything. So
okay.
We're doing a break till Easter, but it's ghost-town-radio.de, Deutschland, you know, Germany. We usually broadcast our shows live in the evening here, which would be afternoon at you, by, you know, in your time zone, and then we repeat it the next day. But every day I post the schedule for that day. So
I see you call yourselves the Moro Airwaves.
The Moro Airwaves, actually, right now, wait, let me check. Let me check my website. What is, are we still the Moro Airwaves?
That's what it
yeah,
says.
Yeah, we're still the Moro Airwaves. But right now, actually, our motto is culturally appropriate.
Okay. Wow. I love the typeface.
We change it every month.
Uh-huh. Well, good, good. Adam, it was great hearing from you.
It's a really cool thing, and we got people just jumping in and doing stuff.
It's amazing that you're from the local area on Long Island, and here you are in Germany now doing radio over there. It's incredible.
Oh yeah, I caught the bug. You know, from my dad, he did radio at WSB a long time too.
I remember the classical shows. The classical shows that he did were phenomenal.
Yeah, he was top notch. We've actually played some of them, and they were a big hit here too, because I have a bunch of his cassettes, and we actually did Classical Mondays for a while.
Oh wow!
Where every Monday we play like one side of a tape because he recorded everything as well.
Uh-huh.
We just play one side. So for a month we play the Schubert Special, which is a 3-hour show, but it takes four side, you know, every Monday 45 minutes of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And people loved it.
Yeah, he was incredibly popular on Long Island. Absolutely.
Wow. But also, yeah, your brain damage is also just the people call like, wow, this is so amazing, just how free it was, how the people would talk and call, the children would talk, and also the politics. Like, you know, it's amazing even back then it was, you know, dude, a lot of the calls are really reactionary or really just, you know, really totally offensive,
mm-hmm.
like, wow. But instead of freaking out and calling them a Nazi, like, yeah, you'd ask them, like, oh, yeah, why do you think that? Okay, where are you? And it was with tongue-in-cheek, and you let them dig their own grave. And
pretty much.
And just the act of letting them talk about it, then suddenly they weren't so angry as when they started.
That's true.
It was a really wild show.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's bringing back a lot of memories just hearing you describe it, so... Wow. Well, I'm glad it had that effect.
And the best part is always the concert billboard right at the beginning, just to hear what was playing at the Roseland, you know, on April 2nd, 1991, you know?
Right, right.
The concert billboard was ridiculous. How it was so, it was just every night was bands you've heard of. Crazy.
Uh-huh. Well, the way to get to it, just go to 2600.com and hover over the radio selection, and you'll see an other selection. Click on that, and you'll see Brain Damage. You can listen to every episode and relive the 80s and the 90s.
Check them out. They're so wild.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Adam. It's great hearing from you. I hope you come back to the States at some point.
I'll be back in July. I'll let you know, and just I'll ask you here.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I'd love to have you as a guest on our radio live. The people would love it.
Absolutely.
Actually.
Absolutely. Definitely. We'll work that out. And maybe when you're in New York, you can come
for
to our...
Thanks for taking my call and okay. Keep doing what you do. This is fantastic.
All right. Maybe we'll see you at the HOPE conference when you come to New York in July. So look forward to that.
Well, what's the date on that?
The 22nd through the 24th.
I might just be there.
Okay.
And then I'll show up. That'll be great.
Hope.net, all the details. But great hearing from you, and keep the spirit alive.
Always.
All right.
First station of the 90s, baby. Good night,
care.
Good luck, sleep well, dream well.
All right, be well. Okay, that's going to be the last call. I know that we have a lot of calls coming in, but...
That was awesome.
Try to say that again.
That was awesome to hear from him.
Yes.
And be thrust back into that.
Well, just you realize you don't know who's out there, you know, who you have an effect on.
Right? That's, that was like being retweeted from the 80s or something.
You remember Brain Damage, right, Alex?
Yeah, I remember it. I do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I love that he brought up the concert billboard because I can hear it in my head now.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't heard it in 20-something years. And, I mean, I remember that from the 90s. The concert billboard on WUSB was amazing. And wasn't it Christina that recorded it?
Well, we had a whole bunch of different people who did it. But basically, it's people listening concerts that are playing. I guess that's entertaining now to hear what and who was playing where.
But it was how you learned about who was playing where back then, too. You listened to the radio. Somebody told you that, you know, it, at the Roseland or the Wetlands was this band or that band. And it was Long Island and it was the city. So, you know, it was it covered a very wide geographic area. Yeah, I would love to hear the concert billboard again.
Well, you can just go to the website and click on one of those shows. And we have shows we have shows that are even earlier than that. Voice of Long Island was the early 80s. So, oh, boy, it's a real trip down memory lane.
It'd be interesting to just have a, you know, a podcast.
No, we're not taking that. I'm sorry, caller. We're not taking that.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing. But before we sign off, though, I do want to explain something. If we have a few minutes because of... I left hanging out there that I was a defendant today in court.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tell us more. What did you do? What were you alleged to have done?
So I have I got a ticket, a traffic ticket.
Oh, no.
Over 2 years ago, you know, right before COVID started.
Wow.
Right? When was it? It was in late February or kind of mid-February, I guess, of 2020. And I was going over the Williamsburg Bridge, or I was about to go over the Williamsburg Bridge, and I got pulled over for not having a front license plate on my car. You know, and I bought the car in Pennsylvania, where you don't need it, so they didn't have the hardware there, and I'd been driving it around for a really long time, and never had a front license plate. So this cop, this particular day, decided, that was it, and it was my turn to get a ticket for not having a front license plate.
Hang on one second, Alex. Is it Pennsylvania plates or New York plates?
New York plates.
Well, I'm going to have to side with the cop on that because New York, you do require on both sides. But did he wait for the car? Did he wait for the car to pass by and check to see if it was New York or Pennsylvania?
Probably. Yeah. Well, I mean, he did come up from the, you know, behind me. So, yeah, it was right before I got on the bridge. So I almost escaped to Brooklyn. you know, where of course they have no jurisdiction, right? But. So any of it. So he gives me this ticket. He writes me a ticket. Tells me why. You know, turns his body cam on and all this. You know, makes a big spectacle of the whole thing. And I have to say, the guy was just such a jerk. He was really, you know, arrogant. You know, nasty. Kept me waiting for forever. And I'm going out to Brooklyn to do this training thing, this surveillance thing. And at any event, he. He comes back and he's nasty. I get the freaking ticket, and I decide, you know what? I'm going to contest the ticket and try to see if I can negotiate it down, because I think it was going to be a moving violation, which would then increase my insurance and all this, and you know, it would be a pretty significant fine. So I was like, forget this, you know. So I pleaded not guilty. I was going to try to negotiate the fee, and then COVID hit, so the hearing was pushed back. And then COVID got worse. It was pushed back, and it was pushed back like 3 or 4 times. And then I rescheduled it and rescheduled it until finally today was the day where I had this hearing, and it was online. And so I show up for this online hearing on time, because your driver's license will be suspended if you fail to show up for this online hearing, which seems insane. You know, if you can't get WebEx to work, you're going to lose your driver's license.
Wow.
So I show up to the online hearing, and you're just waiting there. It's dot, dot, dot. Your hearing will begin momentarily, dot, 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 you know, on a website, and it's not refreshing, or you don't have a queue number. You have no idea. You have faith that this website is ultimately going to refresh and bring you to a page where magically you're going to have a virtual hearing about your ticket. And there was some message that had a timestamp from like 12 hours before that instructed you to download WebEx. So I put WebEx on as the client. Finally, after waiting like 25 minutes without any kind of counter, the page indicates that it's now going to redirect me to the hearing, and the hearing is going to begin. And then it forces a download of WebEx. So if you don't have it installed, you install it then.
Wow.
While everybody's waiting for your hearing. But I had it installed, so the hearing went into it, not seamlessly, I would say, but there were some weird video and sound problems, and then all of a sudden you're in the hearing, and you see this hearing officer, he begins to ask you who you are, you know, what's the ticket number, blah, 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 you know, we're on the record, there's going to be a hearing. And then I realized this isn't a negotiation with, like, an ADA, to try to get something dropped down to maybe like, you know, a broken taillight or something like that. This is the actual trial. And they had the police officer who gave me the ticket there to give testimony.
Now, when you say there, first of all, this hearing officer, was he in a hearing room or was he at his house? And was the cop in the same room as him?
The cop was in the same room as him, except it seemed like a big room where they have individual booths that where you can go in and have these hearings.
Doesn't that seem a bit unfair, though? The cop is in the same room as the person who's going to decide if you're guilty or innocent? How come you're not in that room?
Because I pleaded not guilty to this thing so many times. This was like the actual trial. Uh-huh. I didn't realize this.
Wow.
But it was like the actual trial where, you know, they're going to determine based on testimony.
You realize you required him to be there.
The cop was required to be
because
there.
Because he contested it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like, it doesn't, they had to take this cop off duty and bring him there.
Uh-huh.
Right? The hearing officer says to me, all right, well, you know, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to take testimony from the responding officer. And that's when I realized, like, what? The guy is even there, right? So, you know, or where is he? I thought he was virtually somewhere else. And then we're going to hear testimony from you. And then if I find you guilty, we're going to look at your driving history and figure out, you know, what an appropriate penalty is. So, according
to what I see on the website here, that's $200 plus a $93 surcharge for not having a front license plate in New York. But you don't get points on your license.
Yeah, and what the hell what does it have to do with your driving history? It's not driving.
Yeah.
I thought you got points on your license for that. But it was basically a $300 fine, right?
Right.
No. So I the guy tells me, you know, this is how it's going to work. Said, okay. And then he asked me, you know, do you have an attorney? So I said to him, well, you know, I am an attorney. And he said, well, that's not what I asked you. You know, do you have somebody who's here to represent you?
Do you realize you could have just gone off screen and put on a hat or something and pretended to be somebody else, like, you know, Roger on American Dad does?
That would have been hilarious.
Why, yes, Your Honor, I am representing.
Oh, I mean, this could be a whole YouTube
Can't
series.
Do that in court, but you can do that online.
Like, hold your finger up for a mustache.
That's right, the mustache nose glasses, you put them on. Yep.
Right.
That's right.
No, that guy has a different color mustache.
Or you can have one of your kids be your lawyer. I mean, you don't have to show a certification that you're actually a lawyer because it's all online.
That's true. That's right. Well, I just turned my face into a cat like the lawyer who actually was in a hearing with a judge accidentally had. That became, you know, a viral sensation in 2020. That really was a good one. So in any event, this guy, he asked me, yes, you know, do you have a lawyer? I said, well, I am a lawyer. That's not what I asked you. Is, you know, is somebody going to represent you? So I laughed a little bit. I said, no, I'm happy to go pro se here, you know. You know, meaning, you know, for yourself or by yourself. So he had a little chuckle about that. And then he goes and starts taking testimony from the police officer where he just turns the camera around. There's a guy standing behind this thing. He says, you know, you state your name, you know, who are you? I'm a responding officer. He said, yeah, okay, tell me what happened. You know, on February, blah, 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 you know, the respondent was driving a vehicle eastbound on Delancey Street, and I noticed he didn't have a front license plate, so I pulled him over and issued the citation. That's essentially what he said. And the hearing officer then asked him, is that the full sum and substance of your testimony? And the officer said, yes, it is. And then the hearing officer turned the camera back to himself, and he said, Mr. Rebellis, I find the testimony of the hearing officer to have certain material deficiencies, and I find the charging instrument to have certain material deficiencies, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and declare you not guilty.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I don't normally take the side of cops, but what's deficient about what he said? What he said is what happened. How is that deficient?
Yeah. Well, there are certain deficiencies on the ticket. I don't think that he tied the registration directly over to me, and his testimony also didn't name me as the owner of the car. So he may have failed to establish a material element, which was that I own the vehicle that he had pulled over, quite possibly. But in any event, I just think that the hearing officer realized this was a 2-year-old ticket for something really stupid, and gave me a little bit of, I don't know if it was professional courtesy or if it was just being a decent human being. I hope it was the latter rather than the former. But he just discounted the testimony of the cop, declared me not guilty, and it gave me such great joy because, again, that cop was such a jerk. He was really rude, really arrogant, and he was forced to go in and give testimony in this inconsequential matter that was then summarily dismissed, and I was declared not guilty.
And think of the awkwardness afterwards, because they're in the same room, and he just said, you know what, without the defendant saying a single word, I don't believe you. Have a good day. Or you know, sometimes what they do in hearings with cops, the cop has to go in and do all his tickets on the same day. So he might have just gone to the next person, and the cop might have stayed in the room with that hearing officer.
Oh, maybe. That'd be an efficient way of doing it, you know, if he had lots of contested tickets, for sure. I can't imagine so many of them get that far down the road, though, but I don't know. But it was a great I feel like, you know, I've had a lot of wonderful legal victories so far.
Well, can I ask, did you ever put a front license plate on that car?
Yeah, I did, almost immediately, though.
Oh, you did? Okay, so you did learn something.
Of course, yeah.
All right.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, that was the story of my virtual hearing today. It was pretty good.
On that note, we started with horrors in courtroom, and we end with triumph in the courtroom, of
yes.
sorts, I guess.
Victories.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to sign off overtime tonight. You know, one day I'm going to forget to sign off and broadcast everything that happens after the show for hours and hours. But I think that's it for tonight. Any closing remarks?
I just want to thank everyone for listening and send out lots of warmth and love to Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to even fathom.
Echo that entirely. Yeah, we miss you, Jim. And, you know, we weren't sure if we could announce anything publicly about your health, which is why we didn't. I think that's worth mentioning, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but for COVID and everything, I think we all would have been, you know, back together a hell of a lot sooner. We'll hope to see you soon.
Yeah, and I think speaking for Rob and Gila, the sentiment would probably definitely be extended from them as well. Also, Virgil, front of mind for us, I hope for many of you, you can share, you can learn from his story. I hope, you know, what now is what I've been thinking as I've been sitting and listening to a lot of this. So I'll try to shake the headache and we can hopefully look ahead to something better. But please share this story. Let's try to learn from this and all be better for it, as if that's even possible.
Okay, on that note, we're going to say goodnight. We will see you next week, Off the Hook at 7 p.m. on WBAI. And Off the Hook Overtime, 8 p.m. on Channel 2600. Everything is on 2600.com. Archives, live shows, and more.
Hope.net for anything regarding the conference.
Yeah, the Hope Conference coming up, a new Hope, July 22nd through 24th, St. John's University in Queens. It's going to be awesome, and we have plenty of room still for more speakers and workshops and all sorts of ideas of ways you can participate. All the details on hope.net, more to come in the days and weeks ahead. Again, see you next week. Good night.